Okay, next up, James McNaughton from Caldera. Okay, there we go. All yours.
Lovely. Okay. Can people hear me? Is that good? Hello, I'm James McNaughton. I'm the CEO of Caldera. How do I click it on? Perfect. There we are. We're Clean Heat Revolution. I always like to set the scene before I start. I'm predominantly here to talk about heat, but I also want to share why heat is really important. So half of all the energy used in the world today is heat, and half of that is used by industry, so it's industrial heat. So it's pretty much a quarter of all energy usage in the world is industrial heat. Now, previous talker was talking about steel making, where we use heat at very high temperatures, but there is a very big range of temperatures that heat is used over. A third of all industrial heat is below 200 degrees Celsius, and the bit that we're very interested in is between 100 and 200 Celsius, because it's not particularly easy to tackle with heat pumps, but it's very easy to decarbonize. And when I look at higher temperatures, being involved with it, it's very hard. Steel making is a good example of something that's almost impossible to do with electric heating elements. You have to use, at the moment, I would argue, you have to use hydrogen, and I'd agree with the previous speaker. Second point is, if you're in a sunny or windy part of the world today, renewables are the cheapest form of energy. I don't just mean electricity, I mean energy. They're cheaper than gas, and they're cheaper than coal. We see this in China, we see this in sunny parts of the world, we see this in America with onshore wind. It is now cheaper than fossil fuels. So you don't care whether you use it for electrical processes or to displace fossil fuels providing you with energy. And then the third point I would say is pretty much everywhere in the world we are deploying renewables, the grid is getting very, very congested. You know, in the UK you hear of 10 or 15 year delays to get solar farm on. We just upgraded our power supply to our factory. It was a complete nightmare. It took us 14 months. We went up to a megawatt. You know, it took huge amounts of management time. But again, people are coming, I want to electrify processes, and they go to the grid, and the grid say, no, you know, 2033, we'll give you an updated grid connection. So with that in mind, I'm going to talk to you about Caldera. So we have a solution around clean heat. We take off-peak electricity. We don't take waste heat, we take electricity in Orwis, and ideally it's behind the meter renewables, so behind the meter solar or behind the meter wind. We take it in, we store it as heat, and we can provide steam on demand. It can be thermal oil, it can be hot water, but we provide heat on demand to a factory. And it works particularly well because factories tend to run 24 hours, well not 24 hours a day, but they tend to run 7 days a week, and they can often run 24 hours a day. Which means that unlike heating, which is the sort of heating you have in the homes, in the UK occurs in the winter, industrial heating occurs through the summer. So even in the UK, which as we know is one of the least sunny countries in the world, it still works maxing solar with industrial heating. Oops. So this is what we're building. We've built a range of sizes of heat cells. So we, on your site, we put a substation in to take the electricity in. We have our heat cell in the center, which stores your heat, and then we normally have a heat exchanger to put steam into your steam network. And steam is a very common, steam is used because it's the cheapest way of moving heat around in a pipe. You can do it with hot water, but you need bigger pipes. You can do it with thermal oil, you need bigger pipes. So people like steam, it's very common. You find it in hospitals, you find it in prisons, you find it often in American buildings, they use a lot of steam. But in factories, they do it. And the reason we use steam is it's just really easy to move it around the site. So we have one big boiler room, and we have a whole lot of pipes moving around the site, and that's how you get your heat around. And it's very modular. If you want more capacity, we can simply put more heat cells on, more substations, and more heat exchangers. And this is the sort of thing we're expecting, where we go to a factory. They want to put solar on behind the meter. They can build a large solar field. We can connect into our units, and I'll explain why in a little bit more detail. This gets around the grid constraint issue. And that factory will always prioritize using electricity for the factory. Electricity is more valuable than heat. never going to convert electricity to heat when someone will use it electrically and they can use it. But we take the surplus. We can either let them use it real time if they've got processes going on, and then if there's a surplus beyond that, we can store it and then carry on running into the evening and early the following morning. So particularly easy to pair with PV. We've got three sites we're talking to that have got wind farms where they're looking to private wire into, but generally planning law in the UK makes it almost impossible to put onshore wind. So we look to go into a factory. They may have put solar on their roof. You know, let's say they've got a megawatt of solar on the roof. They're covering a lot of their electricity. What we would look to do is see if there is a nearby field or some land, bring in a solar developer to work with them, and maybe we put 5 megawatts or 10 megawatts. Their grid connection will still only be a megawatt. We don't look to change the grid connection because we're going to use everything on site. If we can't use it electrically, we'll use it as heat. And again, the point about heat is heat loads are normally much, much bigger than electric loads. This is the problem when you want to go and convert a refinery from coal to electricity. You realize the numbers are really, really high. Good example. Go to a factory making jam, you know, they might use a megawatt of electricity, they'll be using 4 megawatts of heat continuously. But obviously, because they only use a megawatt of electricity, that's the size of their grid connection. But we can go in and put the solar in behind the meter. We don't need to export, everything can get used, and you can build it there. So I always say there are two people I'm looking to sort of talk to when I come to these sort of conferences: people that use heat, people that use steam, and looking to decarbonize. And the other one is people that are developing renewable projects. We can do, our sweet spot is 90 to 200 degrees Celsius. As I said, that's 20% of all industrial heat. Covers a whole range of industries, pretty much anything in food processing, drinks, brewing, distilling, paper making, huge amount of steam used in making paper. Often you get some high-temperature heat networks, not in the UK. We decided we didn't like heat networks. I know they're coming in now, but it's only going to countries where they've been running for a while. You can sometimes get 150 Celsius heat networks. So we're interested in all of that. We do talk to people about applications above 200. It doesn't particularly suit our technology. We really like the sort of 200 and below space. And this is a typical site. So they'll have a great big gas pipe coming in to an energy center full of enormous boilers. There'll be 4 or 5 of these boilers. One of them is always on hot standby. They might have, say, 2 running in the summer, maybe 3 in the winter, and they'll have 1 boiler that just sits there on hot standby. These rooms are always hot. Just they are. Don't ask me why. They're always quite noisy. And these things are enormous. And they'll have the electrical network coming into the switch room. So this is where we come in. We put the renewables in. We connect into their switch room with the electricity, and we connect into our thermal storage also with electricity. And as I said, we always prioritize electric demand because it's much more valuable than heat, and we then manage everything else through our thermal stores. So let's talk a little bit what's different. How to describe it? I sometimes say, if for those that remember night storage heaters, it's a giant night storage heater in a vacuum flask. It's a little bit more than that. We spend a lot of time, we've developed this really cool material, which is we make it from aluminium and rock. So we can take the lowest grades of aluminium because the only thing we care about is the conductivity. And we melt it and we pour it over these rocks and we let it set. It runs in between all the gaps and it sets, and you end up with a solid block. And it's almost indestructible. I mean, it's unbelievably strong because it's broadly aluminium. But the rocks are a very, very cheap filler, and the aluminium provides all the conductivity and manages the thermal expansion. And what you can see here is a store made up of 36 blocks. Each block weighs about 2 tons. So this is 72 tons of storage material with a vacuum cover that drops over it. It's around 3 meters in diameter, 7.5 meters high, and we will have one running on our site in October. Inside each block, it's very, very simple. We have electric heating elements, and we have a coil. We put the heat in electrically, so simple resistive heaters, and we can take the heat out by injecting water into that coil. And it gives us a very, very safe way of making steam because we flash all of the water to pure steam, and we have our own little heating loop, so it's the same water that goes round and round the circuit all the time. And by varying the amount of water we inject, we simply, it's like the throttle on your car. If we don't inject any water, we don't extract any heat from these blocks. And they can sit quite happily, the unit on the right will sit quite happily, 500 degrees Celsius for as long as you need it to. And the vacuum insulation. We developed it because when we started off with smaller units and we slowly grown the size of the units, we actually found once we got to this point, it's just much easier to deal with. It gives us lower cost than conventional insulation and better performance. And it just allows us, if we want to access the blocks, we can lift the lid off, takes the insulation off, you get to everything and you can just put the lid back on. But in terms of the losses, they're much, much lower than you'd expect through a conventional insulation solution, and it's much smaller. Talked a little bit about this. Very, very little water in each heat cell. Again, a risk with big steam boilers is they blow up. You need specialist staff to run them. If you don't, you tend to have to, it's very difficult to run unmanned operation. So there's always a cost associated with running steam boilers. And without being funny about it, when they go wrong, it's not just your problem, it's probably the factory half a kilometre away, because there'll be a hole in your roof and the boiler will have ended up down there. People, you know, we use them because they're very practical, but they do have inherent risk with them. With the system we have here, you get away from all of that. There's almost no water. We don't have lots of superheated water. So from an operation point, if you're running a factory, this can be run with unmanned operation. And again, there's nothing flammable, there's no combustion. One of our team members, we have little blocks of the material, he lets his child play with it, you know. And just a little bit about our progress. We've just completed our first 2 megawatt hour system at our factory. We've commissioned our steam network. We've been making these units for a number of years. We started off at smaller scale, so at 100 kilowatt hour units. These ones you can see in the picture are up to 200 kilowatt hours. And I said, we're going up to our first full size. So if you've got a factory, if you're interested in how do you decarbonize steam, if you're interested in deploying renewables, please come and find me at the lunch break. But thank you very much for listening.